Well, it's a delight to have this opportunity. When Russ came to me and said, I'd love for you to speak to the Board of Trustees retreat, I thought, wow, I'm so honored to do that. I said, now where will I fall in the lineup? He says, well, you'll be like the first one up. And I said, okay, like the warm-up act for the real event. And he didn't say anything. He just smiled graciously. I said, well, at least you didn't put me right after lunch. And he said, no. People will still be eating, so it's not after lunch, technically. I want to share with you today one of the great joys that I have in this role, and that is to see the church from a lot of different angles, and that includes the privilege from time to time of visiting with you who serve on the boards of our educational institutions. I had kind of an intersection of experiences towards the end of the year that caused me to be reflective leading into this moment. One of those experiences was in the month of October, I had the opportunity to visit each of your educational institutions, sometimes briefly, but did have the opportunity to visit each of the schools and to see the amazing partnership of lay and clergy together in governance of our educational institutions. And towards the end of the year, it didn't change the fiscal situation of any of our institutions, but Jan and I wanted to do a little year in giving to each of our educational institutions just of an expression of our support. And when you give to something, it makes you reflect kind of on what it is that they accomplish in their mission. And in the middle of these two experiences, visiting all of your campuses, the privilege of giving to your institutions, in between those, I was part of a meeting of what's called a Wesleyan Alliance group, a broader Wesleyan group. And part of the conversation was the relationships between denominations and their educational institutions. And when I walked out of that meeting, I had just a sense of joy and thankfulness. Number one, we as a smaller denomination among some that were gathered there invest very generously in our educational institutions as a denomination. There's a real range of investment by denominations in their educational institutions. And the second thing is we experience a high level of alignment between what it is we're called to do as a denomination and the calling that our educational institutions experience. So today I have the opportunity between now and the close time, and I will make sure we're done on time, but to talk about kingdom alignment and more than ever that adjective at the title of this talk, creative kingdom alignment, in order that together we might fulfill the mission to which Russ has referred. So I'm known to be a little technologically challenged, so they decided, since I would be managing my own slides, that we would only have one slide. And all you have to do to get the slide is swipe left on the screen. And that's it. And captured in this diagram, which I understand may be just a little hard to see, is the journey we have been on over the past few years. Let me describe it for you. And along the way, let me celebrate with you some of the ways that alignment is already happening. This is something I put together to share with a group of pastors and superintendents and those who are catalytic in our movement at the end of October, and then I included it in my report to our general board in November. It describes the journey we've been on. Back in 2016, we were called the 50 Days of Prayer. And so you see on the upper right-hand side, it began with prayer. We called it the Make the Most Challenge, and we challenged all of our conferences, the lay and clergy who were gathered there, to pray. And Make the Most was based on Ephesians 5, 15 and 16. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil, because the days are challenging. So having that sense of what is the kairos moment, what is it that God's calling us to accomplish right now, to focus on as we as a denomination enter this next season of opportunity. And God worked powerfully in that time. In fact, in subsequent meetings, we had some upper room experiences. I'm so grateful we have a God who still delights to meet with us and to guide us. And we were led to two things, so basic and so biblical, that we are to be making disciples and we are to be multiplying churches. And that was in response to the reality that even though God has blessed us to be an incrementally growing denomination in a season when many denominations aren't experiencing growth, the truth is between our incremental growth and the increasing secularization of our society as a whole, that there are more people than ever who do not have an opportunity to make an informed decision about Jesus Christ. We've called that the gospel gap. And we have asked God, by His grace, to include us in a movement of His Spirit, should He choose to do so, that closes that gospel gap. And we captured it in this statement in the heart of that circle, celebrating every time a disciple makes a disciple and a church multiplies itself until the Wesleyan Church has a transforming presence in every zip code. Or for our Kingswood people here who do not have zip codes in Canada, they have contextualized it. This was their participation in this contextualization. Their statement in celebrating every time a disciple makes a disciple, church multiplies itself until the Wesleyan Church has a transforming presence near every Tim Hortons. That's in Canada, that's where people show up, where two or three are gathered. It's probably at a Tim Hortons. And so an opportunity to think about what contextualization in their culture would look like. So when we got done praying about it, we realized that in order for it to happen, God would have to transform the Wesleyan Church into a kingdom force. And that kingdom force, if we're really going to close the gospel gap, it has to be multi-generational, multi-economic, multi-ethnic. It has to be women and men fully expressing their God-given gifts. It has to be lay and clergy together. There's never been a significant movement of God without the significant involvement of laity. A kingdom force. And I'm so thankful, and this is the first place I just want to stop and celebrate a minute, that our educational institutions are involved in disciples making disciples. I love it when we get tangible reports of salvations that have happened at our schools, and we get them from all of our schools, of baptisms that are taking place. The variety of creative places, ponds and tanks and so on, in which baptisms are held at our schools. The discipleships that happens in the residence halls and in chapel services and so on. And we are involved as our educational institutions in the church multiplying itself. In fact, for years now, Oklahoma Wesleyan has been a leader in church planting residencies. There have been, just as recently as this past year, a church planting boot camp, so to speak, in Kansas, in which half of the participants were students connected with Oklahoma Wesleyan. I know IWU has a stated goal from out of its students to plant 50 churches. And we are a transforming presence. I love the ministry engagement that Kingswood carves out in its community. Their community knows their presence. It makes a difference. In some cases, in some places, educational institutions aren't even known that they exist. In fact, I got to tell you, some years ago, I was up at Kingswood, and I went out for a run in the morning. I don't run with my glasses on. And where Kingswood is located, the streets run all different angles. And I got lost when I went out for my run. It's an embarrassing thing to be at an educational institution, go out for a run, get lost, and then you got to ask for directions. So I didn't want to lie about it, but I wasn't comfortable with the full truth. So I came across someone on the sidewalk, and I said, I've heard there's an educational institution here in town. And they knew it, and they named it. And I said, oh, okay. Where's that located? And they pointed me in the direction, and on I went with my run, and I got there a few minutes late for class that morning by the time I got back there. They're known for the difference they make in their community. Years ago, Bill Bright talked about seven mountains of cultural influence. And it's probably true that some of that vision needs to be updated and reapplied, but I will say this. One of the benefits to the educational institutions that are part of the Wesleyan Church is we are discipling and equipping people to make a difference, not just in the walls of the church, but whatever their major, to make a difference in that sphere of influence. So we realize those of us who have superintendent as our primary responsibility, there are 26 of us right now, that superintending a movement is different than superintending a denomination. If God's going to move in the ways we ask and introduce the kind of flexibility it's going to take for us to keep in step with the Spirit, what'll need to change? And I'm so proud of my colleagues who have identified, they've really narrowed it down. They said, these are eight things we're going to have to really focus on, and each of them have taken a step further. Out of these eight, these are the two or three I need to concentrate on personally in order to be ready to be included in the movement that God may create. And then we gather together those who are entrepreneurial in terms of the kingdom, and whether they are lay or clergy, that they have this ability to catalyze new and creative and innovative ways of making a kingdom difference. You know, when Ephesians talks about the first movement, it says Christ himself, Ephesians 4, that reminds us that if it's a movement of God, no human's going to create it. It's got to be the Spirit of God. We've got to be increasingly responsive to the Spirit. It was Christ himself who gave some to be apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers. Different roles that God used in the original movement. And I want to stop there for a moment. Someone has said, of those five roles, apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers, that denominations, as they age, tend to marginalize those apostles, prophets, and evangelists type because they get outside the box really quick. They color outside the lines. They get so caught up in the mission and what it takes to accomplish it that, wow, some of the rules that seem important to others don't seem as important to them. Not that their heart is that, not that there's a spirit of rebellion. It's just this go for it. And denominations, as they age, tend to marginalize those folks and focus only on shepherds and teachers who seem to do a little bit of better job of at least acknowledging there are some lines out there, whether they stay inside them all the time or not. And you know what? that same reference, the permanent revolution, said, what is true in denominations can also be true in educational institutions, because sometimes those who are wired as shepherds and teachers are better students than some of those other folks. But the problem is those roles, apostles, prophets, evangelists, those are often the catalytic roles that God uses when He's moving in to initiate a movement. Those roles have a way of creating the initial momentum that's needed. And don't get me wrong, the goal is not to highlight one group and downplay another. The goal is the full engagement of apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, teachers, every role, every gift, if we're going to take new territory. So this group we pulled together was predominantly some of those apostles, prophets, evangelists type. We've come to call them apostolic multipliers. And we said, we recognize there have been times we've marginalized you in the past because we're not quite sure always what to do with you. But we invite you, please pray with us, position us, lead us. And I love the way that when that's done, the Bible makes it clear, all those roles are equipping roles. Because the real kingdom force is every minister, the priesthood of all believers, until everyone is equipped. Apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, equipping all of God's people to be ministers. Everyone in this room is a minister. Some are ordained, some are not. That doesn't matter. From God's perspective, ministers, kingdom force. And so these folks in an upper room time of prayer really said, yes, we don't need to stay away, we need to step in. And that has moved us then to say, okay, how do we measure things differently? The questions we ask, the things we pay attention to in order to know if we're making disciples, planting churches, transforming communities. Questions like, who is making disciples in our church? How many disciples are multiplying that church to other locations? Where are we a transforming presence in our communities? I work closely with our chief of staff, Dave Drury, and recently he was out to Houghton College. And after a time at Houghton, one of the students came up and talked with him. Her first name is Elaine, and she is a believer from India who moved from India as a teen to live in a different majority Muslim country with her family for several years. This country was in the Middle East. And she came to Houghton because it's a distinctly Christian university. And her goal is ministry. But the way she said it to Dave is this. She is getting a non-ordained ministry degree with the intent to be a tent maker as a discipler and multiplier, perhaps in a medical profession. In a Muslim country or in a non-Muslim country, with a good number of Muslims in it, like India itself. And he went on to connect her to Global Partners, our missions agency. And what struck him is that she recognized in those contexts, perhaps to make the greatest kingdom difference, what it would need to mean is having a profession and the respect and the opportunity that brings, but to approach that with a kingdom calling to be salt and light as she lived that out. It's one of our educational institutions that's preparing her to do that. I was just exchanging text recently with Pete Benson of the Benson School of Business at Southern Wesleyan University, and catching a sense of what it means for co-vocational ministry like ever before. The transport, the ability to get around, move around a lot. When you have a career in the financial services, what does it look like for people who in their profession talk to people in the context of finances about what's important to you? What long term do you want to see happen? What about your what great opportunities in which to interject the gospel? About the same time I was texting with him, one of the trustees at Kingswood, Damian Williams, happened to be also in a conversation with him at that point, talking about the business as ministry degree that's developing there, and how ministry in the context of business offers so much opportunity. You see, what I'm excited about here is if students go to our educational institutions, they are in a disciple-making context and they will be challenged to make disciples. And there's a relational context, whether it's their dorms, their classrooms, work, chapel, wherever it is, for that to happen. But this is not just manifesting itself in relationships. It's manifesting itself in the programs that you are developing in your institutions. And these programs are creative in the areas of ordained and credentialed ministry, but they are not limited to this. They are in every field of endeavor. So if you're in accounting, or if you're in a medical profession, or whatever your profession, you have a kingdom calling to live out. Folks, do you realize the power of this? That we will not experience what we're hoping for, longing for, praying for as a denomination if we don't figure out how to do this together and do this more than ever. So there's a disciple-making, church-multiplying, transforming presence in every community. We're working on partnerships, and by the way, when people start to hear what's on our heart, it resonates. And it'll take resources beyond what USF provides, beyond what EIF provides. You already know that. You're engaged in that. We're increasingly engaged in that as well, as a denomination. So this alignment, which is showing up in the experiences our students have, the academic programs that are being birthed, how can we more than ever creatively align in order for this kingdom force, multi-generational, multi-ethnic, multi-economic, women and men, lay and clergy, to emerge? Now, I think many of our churches have been somewhat hijacked by a message of frugality, and so for many parents and students, it comes down to the dollar. I think these messages are more prevalent than ever before. And they're teamed with a message of practicality. I want to pay as little as I can for my education, and when I'm out, I want to be sure I can get a good paying job. And I would say in many, maybe most of our churches, these are the kinds of discussions that take place. I think the questions of cost efficiency and whether it will result in a practical opportunity are good questions to ask. Quite frankly, as this guy, heavily influenced by a Dutch culture, who is a recovering pragmatist, I can resonate with much of that. But these days, I'm more than ever captured by an idea we discussed in our last WEC meeting, Wesleyan Educational Council. It's our presidents, it's our board chairs. And the conversation went towards, and I don't remember everyone who was involved in it. I know Steve was involved in it. I know Shirley was involved in it. We began to talk, if we need a kingdom force, we have to begin to identify the kingdom value that's provided by our educational institutions. Sure, you can get an accounting degree at a secular or Christian university. Sure, you can be trained for a medical profession as a nurse or whatever the role. But what does it mean to be in an educational institution while giving you that excellence in training also prepares you to be that kingdom difference maker? What if you go into that work not only being skilled in what you do, whatever it is, including ministry, but you do all of it with this sense of kingdom calling? What meaning does that add? What value does that add? What possibilities for a kingdom force does that create? What if the value add, at least in part, is to say every one of our kids who's part of one of our Christian universities will recognize whatever your major, you are called. And you are included in what's going to make a difference forever. Kingdom value. So these days I'm trying to figure out how to communicate that even more effectively, convinced that through the kind of experiences you're offering and the kind of programs you're developing, that we will be able to equip the kingdom force that's needed for what God has yet for us to accomplish. So I end with this last little text. You're going to think all Wayne does is spend time texting. There's a lot of that, I got to tell you that. But so about every month or so, I have breakfast at a fine dining establishment in Elwood, Indiana. And my dad was a lay person. That's part of the reason I love so much when lay people fully engage, because I grew up in a home like that. And my dad was a builder, and I, from age 12 till I was in college, worked with him, which convinced me more than ever that I was called to the ministry. And he didn't like any chain restaurants. Wherever we were working, he wanted to find the small town, hole in the wall, good food, the coffee way too strong kind of place. And that's this kind of place. And I meet with one of the basketball coaches named Jeff at Indiana Wesleyan. And the reason I meet with him is selfish, admittedly selfish. Every time I meet with him, I leave more fired up about disciple making than when I started. Now, he happens to be a Wesley Seminary student. I don't know that he has any intention of ever being in a pastoral context in a local church. He's just having way too much fun making disciples in the realms of athletics and business. So he sends me this text. He's always got pictures and, things from the... It's hard for me because I'm challenged. I told you that. I've already confessed that. And getting to blow up and see all the stuff he sends me. But today he sent me two things. He said, here's my pastor following a business person around who's showing him his business. And then he's praying because this business person, who's a fairly new believer, is now discipling the core team of his business in terms of how can we do what we do so this is a place where people find Jesus, fall in love with him, follow him, and yet honor the appropriate kinds of, you know, boundaries that you find in these environments. And when it's done, he says, this is my pastor getting the tour, and he's just about to pray for this person, an anointing upon his business and his congregation, the employees that he has. He says this in the next picture. Here's our athletic director talking with all of us who are coaches, and we're talking about most, and it was right in the center of the notes, making disciples, how athletics is an amazing context to make disciples. Hey, all of our institutions have enrollment challenges. And all of institutions with enrollment challenges are thinking about athletics as part of that answer. You know what I love? Yeah, we own our enrollment challenges. Yeah, we're realistic. Athletics may help us in that. But we say, and guess what? It's a great opportunity to make more disciples for Jesus Christ. My friends, that is value added. That is kingdom force. And I'm glad over this next 24 hours, we may get a chance to explore more. How can we be innovative in order for that to increasingly be a reality? Amen? Amen. 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 Thank you, brother.
Yes, express that thanks.